In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Betches Media presents...
Chrissy Teigen referred to Donald Trump as a pussy-ass bitch.
Look, he's a sick puppy. He shouldn't be there.
Well, I lost half a day of skiing.
I'm going to punch him out, and I'm going to go to jail, and I'm going to be happy.
The Betches Up Podcast.
A speaker has not been elected.
Hello, hello. This is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. I'm Amanda Duberman, news director at Betches.
I'm Elise Morales, the writer of the Betches Up newsletter.
And I'm Millie Tamaris, comedian and sub-video contributor.
Forgive me if I'm like a little out of breath. I was just doing like PT exercises and I did not injure myself. They just don't tell you that being in your like mid-30s, you just have to do it to function. Like my back just does, it just hurts if I don't do these silly little things all the time.
Yeah, I am more and more rendered breathless, but I'm in a fourth floor walk-up.
Yeah, when like, you walk up, ooh.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
But also, I've lived here for a number of years to like, I'm like, haven't I trained to walk these stairs? Like, shouldn't my body be able to handle this now?
Why is it getting like, harder?
Yeah, I'm like, I do it every day. So you would think that like eventually I would... like grow the strength to walk up my stairs, but no. I take my dog for a walk and then he like zooms up and I'm like, you can run if you want, but you'll be waiting at the door.
Yeah, four flights of stairs is crazy.
It's a lot.
No, yeah, they just suddenly my back hurt. And I went to the doctor and I was like, why is my back hurt? They're like, it just hurts now. The reason is because you've never worked a single muscle in your back. That is why it hurts. So we're doing that now. We're doing that now. My 34th birthday is on Monday and I am feeling it everywhere.
What, that is the 14th?
The 14th, yes.
Yeah, I'm like trying to see what celebrities.
It's Halle Berry. That's the main one.
No, there's a few.
She looks younger than I do.
Tim Tebow, Mila Kunis, Steve Martin,
Magic
Johnson.
These are good. Leo, Kings and Queens.
Daniel Steele. You got Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, wow. That's
a
good one.
I know it was a lot because I, you know, for that other newsletter I write, mm-hmm. David Crosby.
I like Mila Kunis. I like Halle Berry.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh my God, I didn't know that one. That one's my favorite. I should hit her up and maybe we can have a joint birthday party in the West Village somewhere.
Marsha Gay Harden.
All good ones.
Lit.
Leo has a bunch of like,
Leo has
I mean,
a bunch
because of the
it
nature of Leo, there are a lot of celebrity Leos. Barack Obama is a Leo.
Yeah, I was confessing to Millie right before that I did for my birthday, in the interest of transparency with our feminist audience, I did get Botox for my birthday, and I can't stop staring at my forehead.
Listen, this is an audio medium, but it looks great.
Elise, your forehead is flawless.
Well, I've toxed it.
Okay. I didn't know. I didn't. The video we put up of you talking about the writer's strike, I was just like, everything she's saying is brilliant, but her forehead is, I could... gorgeous.
Well,
you know, Amanda, see, that's a feminist queen. You know, when someone says eyes up here, they mean their eyes and
exactly.
Not their breasts.
No.
But Amanda's looking goes be above and beyond feminist standards to stare at the forehead.
Yes, professionally relaxed forehead. I finally, yeah.
I do know, I cannot say who, but I know of a very, very, very famous A-list celebrity whose writer says you can't look at her forehead.
Oh, right. Yes.
A friend worked with her on a project. And
yes.
It is in her rider that you are not to look at her forehead, which to me, like, I
that
feel
would
like
make
that's,
me look. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a Streisand effect. It's like I wouldn't have looked at that person's forehead or even thought about that person's forehead until I read that. And then it would be forehead at the forefront of my mind.
I guess I get it now. And now, as somebody who has had procedures performed on her forehead, I guess
girl,
I would be
you
like,
got one injection of Botox. Let's chill, because I'm sure half of the fucking podcast audience has had it.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, we approve women's bodies, women's choices.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that'll be a theme for today. Later.
Absolutely. You're speaking of women's choices, your nails are very good today, Millie.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you. There's a little vacation cherry nails on them. Vacation nails. They're sharp. I forgot. You know, I take breaks from the acrylics, and then you just have to do, there is a learning curve or a relearning curve of like, oh yeah, this, I have to relearn how to type and text. And guys, put in my contacts, because I did scratch a cornea.
No,
we live and we learn, like Alanis Morissette
that's
says.
That's tough. I feel like it's anti-feminist that there is not a device that can help you assist in contact insertion when you have acrylics.
Well, this girl made one for when you put contacts, but when you when you're in the gas station or something and you have to put in your ATM card and take it out really quickly. That's really challenging with the nails. So she had like what is essentially a chip clip for your ATM card.
Girl boss slay.
And it's just like, you know, this is a bad bitch business.
In Barbieland, you wouldn't need that. In Barbieland, you could just pull everything out.
Necklaces, the ATM thing, putting on contacts.
To pay. She's tapping to pay.
You're
for a
born
long time.
With a frozen forehead. All
tap
of it.
To yeah, pay. Exactly. And my nail artist, this is crazy. You want to see women in STEM? Women in STEM. She fucking put an NFC chip in one of the nails.
What?
When you put your phone over a nail, it has her fucking add like her contact info, her contact card. And that is women in STEM.
Yeah,
that's another level. That is
entrepreneurship.
Yeah, because now it's not even about the QR codes. It's about you put your phone over and it already pops up like the website or whatever it wants you to visit. And she did it with fucking nails. And
that's stunning.
Is women in STEM.
That's stunning. Put her in the federal government. I guess we'll get to today's number, but we're not going to take a heavier tone with this next story, because today's number is 3. That is the number of people who have been arrested in connection with, yes, the Montgomery brawl. We did not record on Monday. We instead aired our episode, our much more tasteful episode with the White House press secretary, where this had not happened. So we did not inquire about it. But of course, arrest warrants have been issued for 3 of the men, all white, involved in instigating the fight that broke out at a river dock in the Alabama town over the weekend. If you missed this or didn't even read a summary, basically, a number of white voters attacked a black security guard unprovoked is what happened. He basically, I guess, was saying, like, you need to move your boat so other people can have their boat here. And they lost it on him. They started, 3 of them jumped him. Then I think the next thing that happened is that the young man, I think his name is Aaron, jumped from the nearby boat to help the security guard who was being beat up. And then this escalated and escalated, mostly because of the white. I get a mixed up between who was on the pontoon and the riverboat. So I'm sorry.
The pontoon boat was the white guys.
White people.
And they were...
Yeah.
Okay.
I've watched every angle, every Facebook Live, all the interviews. I sent it all to Elise. I was like, Elise, Montgomery brawl. Watch this space.
Yes.
I've watched every meme.
We need
and
a
basically,
movie.
It needs, somebody said fuck Below Deck. We need need the reality show about
absolutely.
That place. And you absolutely. So basically, the pontoon, they've been doing it apparently for years. There's a popular riverboat, and I guess they have like multiple trips a day. So they needed to unload and it was full of people, unload this one boat and then reload for the next trip. And this one guy was left to fend for himself. He said, can you move it? Can you move it for a few hours? They didn't hear him. Then he just, which happens, moved the boat himself.
Yep.
Like he moved it out of the way so that they can dock, because there's also a ramp for people in wheelchairs and stuff too.
Yeah.
Like it's not just
he gave them a chance to move it.
They didn't move it. And then he said something. They're like, why'd you move my boat? Then one guy beat him up. Then all of them beat him up. And his coworkers were watching him get beat up from the boat and they were disturbed. So obviously when the boat docked, There was one white guy that helped, though. Okay. This one white teen, and he got punched.
Yeah, let's talk about him first.
Yeah, no, no, no. We don't have to talk about him, but it wasn't simply just black. There was one white kid who was like, he looked like he couldn't be over 19, tried to jump in, immediately got punched in the dick and walked away. So just shout out, and he has a bowl cut. He never had a chance.
There really is something for everybody in the Montgomery Boat Brawl. Elise, what was your favorite feature?
Okay, my favorite feature, number one, is the memes of the guy getting hit with a chair, because there was a folding chair that was used as a weapon. Yeah. But my favorite is like when you watch a video of the fight, there is, because this is like an active dock that usually people are like coming and going and partying and having, I imagine there are like restaurants, like it's an active dock area. So in the background of all of these fights, it's just like, like you can hear like the music in the back. And then there's one video in particular where you can hear someone on the PA from the riverboat, which is the riverboat is the one that wasn't allowed to dock. The pontoon boat is the one that was in the riverboat spot. There's someone from the riverboat goes, "Don't fuck with the riverboat crew. Don't fuck with the riverboat crew." And I just think about that one, line all the time where I'm like,
And it was called Harriet, right? The riverboat?
The riverboat was the Harriet too.
Oh,
the riverboat
man.
Was the Harriet too. And there is, I mean, to shout out to a kid, there was a kid on the riverboat who was like 16 who did, because like there's a period of time where the riverboat people are stuck on the water watching the pontoon boat people beat up the security guard. And one kid who was like 16 leapt from the riverboat and got in the water and like swam over to like join the fray.
Yeah.
Yeah, to fight.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, it was certainly interesting to behold.
Millie, what is your favorite feature?
There's so much. There's a song called Montgomery Brawl that basically recaps it.
Yeah.
The chair jitsu videos. I guess it's just like one of those stories where people thought that they could like act without consequence. And then when other people came and defended this man, like it was just really, really just satisfying to watch. And it's just like there was a true sense of justice, and that the fact then that one guy, the chair guy, it was like, there's a lot of debate about the chair guy, whether he went too far with hitting the woman in the head. If you watch from all angles, she was getting in it.
Yeah, listen, I believe most recently he's wanted, police want to talk to him, but I don't think he's facing charges. They just like want more information. Like it was at a certain point in this brawl, it was like, if you were not on offense, if you were on the menu, like
but she also, there is like videos of her punching people and all that stuff, so it's like, you know what, like I mean, want a victim blame, but what was she doing there, you know? Like
it's very clear which side to root for there. And also, like, my favorite part was that right before they started going in on the poor security guard, when he just yeets his hat.
Oh, yeah.
It was incredible.
The bad signal.
And, of course, the Renaissance painting of the guy. I don't even know if he was affiliated with either group, who just was, like, posing in the security camera.
Yes. When the chair.
He needs a brand deal.
Incredible.
With like Nikon or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think Bravo, I would Bravo. Watch. I don't know if they need to like, I would watch the below deck of the Harriet boat crew, because I'm sure just the things they've seen. Okay, before this, if you point a gun to my head and says, "Does Alabama have a river?" I wouldn't know.
Don't, Millie, just don't use that idiom with Alabama.
Okay. Yeah, that's true, that's true.
Alabama to heart. Listen, maybe this will be good for tourism at the riverfront.
Oh,
that riverboat company is definitely probably going to have a wait. That was the monoculture and the unit and the moment, the sort of like stuck boat moment that we all needed in the midsummer slump.
Best thing about Republican culture is boating culture. That's always something I say, but then I don't know. I don't know if I want to be associated with pontoons.
Well, it is. Yeah, it is a new level of entertainment value.
Today's episode of American Fever Dream is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always afford the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you. It's Nuuly. Nuuly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for the season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Nuuly is a subscription rental service, and for just $98 a month, you get your choice of any six styles. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity. You get fast, free shipping and returns, and professional cleaning in Nuuly's state-of-the-art laundering facility. No laundry for you to worry about. This is the best. You just put it back in your box, send it out, and before you know it, you've got your next one. And you always have the option to buy what you love for sometimes up to 75% off. I bought the Rachel Antonoff pasta puffer from them. I was obsessed with it, like everybody who tries it is, and it was completely sold out everywhere else. So I felt like I really, really had an in there. So thank you, Nuuly. Nuuly is an amazing value at $98 a month for any six styles. And right now you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code FEVERDREAM20. Just go to NUULY.com. That's Nuuly with two U's, and enter the code FEVERDREAM20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's NUULY.com, Nuuly with two U's with code FEVERDREAM20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental, change your clothes.
All right, now we'll get to the main news. We'll start with the outcome of a special election in Ohio this week. So you all know, because we talked about it on the podcast a million times, in the newsletter a million times, the Republican-led state legislature in Ohio, which is, like many states, gerrymandered within an inch of its life, held an expensive and unnecessary special election this week on a proposal to increase the threshold of votes needed to pass a constitutional amendment to the state constitution. So that typically requires a vote of 50% plus one, which makes perfect sense. I'm pretty sure that's the case for pretty much everything except where we have the filibuster. Like, that's, you know, direct democracy, 50% plus one. They tried to change that to 60% for a very sneaky reason, because they knew that a pro-abortion rights ballot initiative in November that has, you know, almost a million signatures, I think, that's absolutely going to be on the ballot, would have a harder time passing if it needed to get 60% of the vote. That initiative, it was called Issue 1, it failed overwhelmingly. Ohio voters rejected Issue 1. It was about 57% to 43%, which, you know, kind of notably not 60 to 40, which is a good, which means that this turnout was important. Some interesting things here is that more people voted to reject this initiative than voted for Joe Biden in the state. And the opposite side was less popular than Donald Trump. So it's clear that this is not a partisan issue for people, especially when this was kind of an arcane way to this was the type of election that I feel like normally only really insider super engaged voters would know about and show up for. So the fact that it got national attention, this abortion rights were not directly on the ballot, but people, you know, the grassroots and people had messaged rigorously enough that they needed to turn out, like, it feels pretty huge.
Yeah, I think that what we have just seen and what we are seeing time and time again is, number one, people don't like having their rights taken away, which is why every time the abortion issue comes up in elections now, we have seen a lot of success. And then number two, people don't like when you fuck with the actual democracy of the United States. Like, every election denier lost their elections for a reason. Like, people do not want you to fuck with their vote and what their vote means. And I think that that actually is an issue with bipartisan standing. I think that even someone who maybe doesn't know how they feel about abortion, or doesn't feel strongly, or maybe is slightly anti-abortion, can still see how, like, no, that's not right. Like, it's not okay for them to say now we can't have ballot initiatives, which is like a form of direct democracy. Like, you're basically saying, like, oh, the people can't influence the legislature of the state. That's not cool. And so I think that, yeah, it's just, I mean, they literally took a pie to the face with this. They looked so foolish.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think, to me, it's like, people don't like when you take away democracy, but it's also like, again, abortion issues, like we all know, are popular. Like, you know, pro choice, pro-abortion. Like, no one wants to take away abortion, or like the majority of people want abortion to be in place. I feel like there are a lot of people in the middle, and then there is a smaller number of people who are like vehemently mm-hmm. anti-abortion. So it's like the people who are very pro-abortion are more likely to be engaged, vote in this. And the people, I feel like there is also just a swath of people who don't care either way, but aren't incised enough to like take away abortion, that they just stayed home, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's also like the two extremes, and the people in the middle didn't, you know, they could, because again, this is like a popular issue, like a popular cause, you know? So it's going to be really interesting to see how Republicans move forward with this strategy of, because, you know, anti-abortion stuff is not that popular amongst even Republicans.
Yeah, I mean, it's just proving time and time again to not be a winning issue, which is so funny because their whole argument was like, send it back to the states. It should be right. up to the states to decide. And then now they're like, oh, wait, but 60% has to, like, it kind of goes to show that, like, the anti-abortion movement was never actually about doing what the people wanted. It was about imposing anti-abortion views on everyone regardless. Because again, the reason that we're in the situation we're in isn't because people voted to take away the right to an abortion. It's because a president who was not elected by the majority of people in the United States put in place activists on this issue into the Supreme Court, which is the only branch of government that isn't elected by the people. So they, the route to them winning, quote unquote, this fight for now was never actually by voting or winning the most people. And so the whole like send it to the states thing was always just a cover. And now they found themselves between a rock and a hard place because they are sending it to the states. And look what's happening in them. Ohio voted for Trump by a lot.
Yeah.
By a lot. And that's happening in a bunch of different places where it's like, oh, actually, people don't like to have important rights taken away. Women know, as we've seen, women are paying attention to what's going on in Texas and these different, like all these testimonies from people who had complicated pregnancies. Like, women know the reality of why abortion, legal, safe abortion is necessary. And honestly, I think that there are a decent number, especially of like younger men, who want their girlfriend to be able to get an abortion.
Totally.
They get an unplanned pregnancy. Like it is an issue that actually, even though it's been so polarized in our country, there is a lot of bipartisan appeal because there are probably deeply conservative Republican women who have had to have abortions for medical reasons, like the women that we were just talking about in Texas. And there are probably some like slightly right leaning dudes who are like, well, who have had maybe an abortion with a girlfriend in the past, you know, like this issue actually can have like this can. An abortion can happen to anyone. And so I think that we're finding that it's actually a more bipartisan situation than we even realize.
Right. Or, you know, again, I can also see this guy who like had an abortion with the girlfriend is conservative. He's just going to stay home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to get in it. So it's like when that's the single issue thing too, it's like they're not incised enough to do it because it's more nuanced and stuff.
Right. And as encouraging these ballot initiatives and these successful direct attempts to codify abortion rights in all of these, I mean, red states, honestly, you know, in Ohio, in Kentucky, I think they're trying in Arizona now, which is more of a swing state. I mean, I was telling Elise, like, it does make you wonder with how popular abortion rights seems to be, like, could they pull this off in Arkansas, in Alabama, in Mississippi? I don't know. And that's wonderful to see. But it also if I were like a Democratic strategist over the past couple decades, I'd be feeling kind of dumb because this issue is winning elections when it's not even on the ballot. Abortion rights are more popular in Ohio than Joe Biden. And you have to beg the man to, you have to beg to anyone abortion. In this party to say anything. And it's like, it's great that the, I think it's important that the, my sort of like political reaction is just like, oh, we could have like attached this cause to individual candidates to help us get elected for all of these years. But no, we pretended like, oh, it's, we don't really want to touch it. There's abortion's kind of like a touchy issue. It's really down the middle. It has never been down the middle. Hmm. It is not down the middle in Ohio. So it's like for all of this, I don't think like if the overturning of Roe leads to an outcome where in a majority of states, it's just like a very firm constitutional right to get an abortion, that's great. It is very gratifying right now to see just how wrong they were. And it's like Elise said, like, of course, when a Supreme Court that was like unjustly installed by an unpopular, a president who lost the popular vote, who had to manipulate even those voters, like, of course it doesn't match the popular point of view. And it's like kind of just a relief to like see it in action, because I'm sure a lot of us, like, as I was, it was like, do people actually feel this way? Like, is everyone just secretly harboring really anti-woman beliefs? And I mean, yeah, probably.
Yeah, no, that's the one thing that unites the world. But
they think that, specifically abortion rights, more people do benefit from. So like these wins are really so heartening to see. I think Caitlin wrote in her piece, it's like these elections should not need to happen, but it's very heartening and should add to our confidence that these are the outcomes over and over again.
And I do think the Roe situation was a wake-up call to a lot of people in general. Like, again, talking about those people that Millie was bringing up, the ones in the middle who maybe didn't feel strongly one way or another, I also think there are a lot of those people who are like, oh shit, they actually overturned Roe versus Wade. Mm-hmm, like now I do feel like I should get to the polls and vote for this. Or, you know, I think it can have either effect of like, there are people who just don't care, who aren't going to care, who never going to care. But I do think there are other people who were converted to caring because we've never seen a right overturned like that. That's never happened. Like, we've never, ever seen something like that. And I think when we're talking about the growing numbers of like Gen Z and millennial people who are voting, when we're talking about like suburban women who sometimes go, suburban white women in particular, who sometimes go one way or another as far as how they're voting, I think that to take a, I don't think that Republicans understood what they were doing when they took a right away from people, and what that can like wake up in someone who maybe was previously complacent or on the fence.
These people, you have to pay attention because these people play dirty too. It's just like the complacency is like, also it's a result of like the Republican Party not following norms in the, you know, quote unquote norms, in the way that like Democrats and like establishment Democrats are, you know, it's like, oh, well, we can all, we disagree, but we can all grab a beer. And it's like, these people are cheating and fucking waiting for people not even dead in the grave. I mean, not cold in the grave to fucking reelect them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not running by the same rules to get their shit done. So
it's not
just like politicians that woke up to it. Like Elise was saying, it's also, we all have to pay attention more, because these people will overturn their fucking capital, you know, whatever, wear fur coats.
I was laughing before because you were referring to RBG as dead in the grave, but I thought you were referring to Mitch McConnell. So that's why I laughed. Not because listeners are probably like, what the fuck?
Well,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it's backfiring. I mean, those really, really painful moments throughout the Trump administration, like that was like the hardest I think I cried during the Trump administration, other than the insane things they were doing to families at the border, was the moment Brett Kavanaugh was sworn in, not just because the abortion rights, but because
there were so many moments I cried.
Oh my God. Yeah. So many.
Yeah. I'm like, so many. I'm thinking back to all the tears I shed. so interesting.
I think the Ruth Bader Ginsburg shit
Ruth was
nuts.
One.
I thought that's what you were going to say when you said you were crying. It's like when they put in Amy Coney Barrett, I was like, whoa.
I think I cried hardest about the Brett one because I was like, oh, you really don't care that he very likely did this to people. Like, he it did, was just yeah. like, it's fine. It's fine. The RBG, I was more like, this is terrible. I was devastated, but it was more like from a professional point of view. I was still on Sup by myself then, the account, and I was just like, I can't handle this professionally. Like, oh my God. It was like late September, and we were like, the 2020 election was coming, and that felt like it was the most important thing ever. And I was just like, oh my God, we have to do a confirmation hearing on top of this.
I remember exactly where I was when I got the RBG news because I had done my first makeup trial for my wedding that day. And I was at Pilar Cuban Eatery in Brooklyn. And me and Danny were like, I was like, I want to go out to dinner because I have this beautiful makeup. And then I got the news and I did cry and my eyelash fell off. And I was all like, because I had so much fucking makeup on too. Oh, and I was like, this is ruined. You guys fucking ruined my wedding makeup trial.
It was awful. No, yeah. And then literally within moments, Mitch McConnell was up there like, all right, this lady says put your unwanted babies in a bag and we're gonna put her on the Supreme Court.
This lady loves people, especially her two black adopted.
We will move on to our next topic in main news, which is kind of a tough one. We're going to talk about the 2024 Senate map. I think it's time. Ohio is kind of like, I think liberals, we hope it's a swing state. And there are so many people there that are working really hard to keep it that way. Obviously has some incredible Democratic representatives. It's tough. There's a senator up for 2024. But let's take a look at the map more broadly, because there's a lot of states like this that could kind of like win or lose the Senate for Democrats. A third of the Senate is up for grabs in 2024. Usually every 2 years, it's about a third of the Senate. So next year, we're looking at 33 Senate elections. Democrats are defending 23 of those seats. Republicans are just defending 10. Seems unfair, but okay. Unfortunately, a lot of those seats are not in super blue states. I mean, we have some in California. I mean, Kirsten Gillibrand is up. You know, we have some Michigan senators that are safe. Massachusetts, in New York, I don't think people are super worried about those ones. But we're also having to keep some Democrats in some peculiar places like West Virginia and Montana. They currently have Democratic senators. There are also swing states that can maybe go either way with senators like Ohio and Arizona. Although I get, you know, Arizona Sinema is an independent and she'll be primaried, but that'll be even trickier. Yeah.
Senator Kirsten Sinema. Mm-hmm. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Such an independent thinker. Republicans are defending seats in like cozier places for them, you know, places like Nebraska, Wyoming, North Dakota, Tennessee, all of these places we know we have listeners. And like whenever we get to like, oh, that state's impossible, we always get listeners that are like, no, we're here. We see you. There's always a chance. And, you know, there are also some of our biggest red state kind of targets that we like to talk about a lot. Ted Cruz in Texas, Rick Scott in Florida, and Josh Hawley in Missouri. So I think that people have looked at this map very pessimistically. However, I feel like they did, you know, Republicans were also supposed to take the Senate easily in 2022, and they didn't. They're getting more extreme. They put through a lot of their Trump-endorsed candidates. They might have learned their lesson this time. But when you guys look ahead at this map and you see kind of like what we have to defend and what it would take to keep, what does it make you think about?
It makes me think that the Democratic Party would be fucking insane if they didn't have you running Joe Manchin's campaign in West Virginia.
Okay. Okay.
Come on. You knew I was going to say.
No, I was at the edge of my seat like, oh.
They'd be. It would behoove them to have a man to do for me.
Yeah, because he'd.
No, but it's just like, fuck, we got to.
These are tough. Yeah.
Yeah, I think. After the most recent midterm, which again was like all the predictions were so bleak and so bad. And then it like we actually held on to the House. And I think that maybe if the Senate, and we almost held on to the House. Wishful thinking. But I mean, like we were supposed to lose the shit out of the House. Yeah. Well, we got George Santos, which is a blessing and in its own way.
Guys, he had a Barbie birthday party too. I can't handle it.
Oh, God.
That's amazing. I do feel like pessimism, like I feel like after seeing the results of the most recent midterm, that maybe if we had if the Democratic Party had not given into so much pessimism, maybe we actually could have kept the House because it was so, I think if we had gone a little harder and also there were issues in how we ran in New York and stuff. But I just think no matter what, everything is on the table given exactly what we were just talking about, because of abortion rights, because of honestly gun rights, climate change. We are in a situation where we are coming out of a summer that was outrageous in terms of heat.
Yeah.
This fire in Maui. We haven't talked about it was horrible. It's horrible. I mean, climate change is knocking at people's doors, and the Republican Party is on the wrong side of every single one of the most motivating issues for people right now. Mm-hmm. Whether it's abortion, whether it's guns, climate, all of it. So I just feel like if we can make the election about those issues and not a Trump versus Biden referendum type thing, which is tough because they're going to potentially both be on the ballot as well. I mean, Meatball's doing really bad. Meatball's doing terrible.
Meatball's running his own. He's like a team of one at this point. He's running rondesantisassistant@gmail.com.
Wait, is it because he looks like a meatball or because he's Italian?
Does he look like a meatball?
I think he
looks like that meatball from the Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Oh. Yeah. He's very
does Trump know that reference?
Kind of round.
No.
Yeah.
No, I think from Trump, it's probably because he's Italian. But the reason it's funny to me is because I do think he looks like a meatball.
Right. Did you guys know, aside, that his name is pronounced DeSantis? And for years, he was like, no, please, it's not DeSantis. It's DeSantis. And then eventually he must have gotten the advice where it's stop correcting people. It's too Italian. You're coming off as you're othering yourself. Just say DeSantis.
And that's what we're talking about when we say, when he says he's all about traditional American values, it's the traditional 1950s value of being racist towards Italians that you really don't see anymore. You're like, Italians have assimilated to mainstream American culture. Olive Garden is one of our most popular franchises in this country. And you have Ron DeSantis saying, do not call me,
Make America Caucasian racist against Italians again.
Italians again. I mean,
that's a campaign that Donald Trump can probably get behind.
He's not going to Sicily like the White Lotus people.
Some other interesting things here is that, we've talked on the podcast before and kind of vented about times in 2020 and 2022 when there are always these really big there are these candidates that are primary or that are running against Republicans in super red states. And they're really exciting because we hate these guys, Amy McGrath against Mitch McConnell. There's been some Sarah Gideon against Susan Collins. I mean, that one was a little bit closer, and they get a ton of money and then they don't succeed. And it's kind of way off and it kind of feels bad. You think who could have? So I feel like this cycle, it's going to be an interesting balance between how much they're investing in the messaging that people should invest in the incumbents that can probably win versus, people that maybe have a chance. And as much as I kind of want to as much as it annoys me to see a lot of money and a lot of attention going to impossible races, we also have to acknowledge that places like Texas and Florida, if we did work a little harder and there were better infrastructures and there are grassroots organizations in those two states specifically saying, it's here. The votes are here. The enthusiasm is here. People can be motivated to vote for Democrats. So I'm curious to know, Millie, do you think Rick Scott could have a chance against him? Rick Scott is the most villainous motherfucker in the Senate, in my opinion.
That's who he said is the other alien option. Yeah. You know, that's also what I was thinking, was like, I understand that there's limited resources. I wonder how much, but it's also like, we can't completely give up hope on these places, because the transition to purple in Texas and Florida and all the, I mean, Florida was blue when I was growing up, you know what really? I mean? Yeah. So it's not this impossible task, but, and especially with Ron DeSantis and how fucked up he's made Florida right now, where they can't teach AP psychology in schools. They're banning all the, like, you'd be like, the Democratic mm-hmm. Party would be fucking out of their mind to not pour everything into getting people to vote. And, you know, and making sure people are excited and know all the issues that a senator from Florida can do and get passed and blah, you know what I mean? And again, like, play in Florida and in Texas, you know, it's defense. It's a mm-hmm. defensive strategy to mitigate harm, and it's possible. And again, even if, you know, these aren't successful, it's all about like that slow burn and building momentum and like, okay, maybe next time, and this is all this stuff and whatever. But I just feel like not addressing or anything because it's not that close or something, like, that's not great either, you know? Right. And like, you know, Stacey Abrams has made, you know, and Beto O'Rourke and all these people, there's things to be said about the strides they've made and like how great.
I mean, I think a lot of us originally got interested in politics because of candidates that seemed unlikely but really inspired us. And so, like, you know, there is a huge impact to people running and getting a lot of enthusiasm, even if they don't win that cycle. We see that's like a big way that women get elected too. They first have to like sort of make a small name for themselves, and then they can have an easier time fundraising next time. Yeah, I heard they were like trying to convince Dwayne Wade to run against Ron DeSantis in 2026. If I were him, I would say absolutely not. I'm going to enjoy my beautiful family.
Well, they're
going to need something. The right candidate. Yeah.
Because, I mean, to unite the black vote and the queer vote, like that would be something.
It would be interesting to see someone with a trans child running against Ron DeSantis.
Yeah. Like, wow.
Symbolically, I think, very interesting. I don't know if it's Dwayne Wade.
I think that's exactly why he'd probably be like,
I do like the idea of First Lady of Florida, Gabrielle Union. I think mm-hmm. that's fun. Mm-hmm. I think other people might like that. I think she would up the fashion game in a way that Casey DeSantis simply never could, simply only wishes that she could.
I did not know. I was so sad to hear that, like, he had another kid when he and Gabrielle were, like, already dating. I mean, like, they're a beautiful family now, but it is complicated. And you know that that Ron DeSantis would absolutely exploit the shit out of that. But yeah, I'm very excited to see who his opponent is. Ted Cruz is up in 2024. There are a couple people that are in the race to run against him. That primary,
like, 2 points.
Yeah,
he was
exactly
he was
exactly. The more you can, like, you know, use elections to get your message out, like, there are wins that are not just the candidate getting elected. We just certainly hope that this cycle, like, the last minute big investments go. You know, you just look at places that, like, oh, have we just sent Obama to this state instead of that one? Like, maybe mm-hmm. it would have moved the needle. So there are some opportunities here that I hope are not missed again. Next up, we will do a women's rights and women's wrongs. So this is kind of a summer-long story I've seen kind of be ambient, and we haven't dug into it too much, but economists have been vocal lately. I've seen a lot of headlines about the historic impact of some major girly pop events on the economy this summer. I'm talking specifically about the Eras Tour, the Renaissance Tour, and the Barbie movie. These pop culture events have impacted the economy in pretty, like, holistic ways, just 360 degrees, from, like, hospitality to apparel to beads. People are flying to different cities for these concerts. They're paying for hotels for the movie. They're buying their outfits. People are buying dinner at local businesses. They're making trips out of it. They're making nights out of it. The final 6 nights of Taylor Swift's Eras Tour in LA is expected to bring in about $320 million to the city. People spent so much to see Beyonce's opening night in Sweden that it temporarily inflated prices in the city. Like, hotels and restaurants knew that people would be coming and would have need places to eat. So for about a month period, the prices were higher. And Barbie has pulled in more than $1 billion, which it's the first movie directed by a woman to do so. So I think us and our listeners have like never really doubted the impact, the spending and buying power of women or women's ability to generate this type of like economic activity. Women control or influence 80% of consumer spending. And they've been, you know, they've done sold out shows across the world before. That being said, what do you think feels striking and very special about this kind of this summer, this moment of it all?
I think that like what feels striking is what's like so different and fresh about all of this is this, not to sound like a stupid like trad wife podcaster or whatever, but it's like it's the embrace of femininity and leaning into it. Because for so long, people, society, whatever, men have said, if you want to be successful, if you want to be, you know, whatever, you have to either completely form into the male gaze or you have to emulate men, or men have to be in the center of what you want or if you want to be successful, you know? And for these things to be so popular and have women, you know, because even though obviously Taylor Swift and Beyonce are like beautiful, sexy women, like Beyonce is basically wearing like a one piece though. You know, it's not like, you know, or whatever. And Taylor Swift too, she's there wear whatever. So it's like, it's not this whole like sex sells, like male gaze shit. It's like,
they're dressed for women. It's very clearly.
Yeah, it's just for women about like the fun glittery outfits and all that stuff.
I don't think Beyonce's B hat is supposed to be a for the male gaze, which is why it's so such a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like again, it's like this cool artistry of like targeting women, focusing on women, focusing on like speaking to women specifically that is making money and being successful, that is what like is different, you know, because they're, you know, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, like they've always, you know, like been international pop stars, but it is through the thing of like schoolgirl clothes or like, you know, whatever kind of bullshit.
Still kind of on men's terms in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's what's different. And then obviously with Barbie, like, we've talked about it 80 times. We don't have to talk about it again. But again, for it to be like as feminist as it could be and make this much money is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think there's something about the fact that like this is actually a narrative. Like I keep seeing articles that are like Eras Tour, Renaissance Tour doing this for the economy. Barbie's doing this for the economy. I feel like in the past, the power of like women's dollars is kind of this little like thing that simmers under the surface. Like even if you go back and watch Mad Men, they're always talking about like, how do you target the homemaker so that she buys whatever? Like it's always been known that it's really us who are pushing things forward, but it's always kind of been in this idea of like, how do we get women to buy stuff for men? Or like, how do we subtly target women, but not like say it out loud because we don't want to come off as too girly, like what Millie was saying. And this is such a full, like now they're actually saying it out loud. Like women are driving all of the, honestly, like monoculture pop events of the summer. Like,
except for the boat brawl.
Yeah, except for the boat brawl, which was actually men and women participated, as we discussed.
Co-ed.
That was a co-ed, you know. The sexes were united.
Men and women can cooperate.
Yes. Men and women can fight each other.
And take a chair to the head, yes.
Yeah. They can. Men and women can both brawl on a dock. But it is like, yeah, it's very interesting that it's not, you know, it's not like there aren't big male movies out. Again, like Oppenheimer didn't even come close in the end of the day to like what Barbie was doing. And like, there are men who are on tour. I mean, I saw Blink 182. So
that is the most men.
Yeah, 50 Cent like is at Barclays
next door
was
to me tonight.
Drake also on tour?
He was at Barclays for he did five, like 10 nights in New York. Yeah.
So it's
and
like,
you don't hear a thing about it except for when a woman throws a bra at him. That was the biggest headline of the Drake tour. It was from a woman.
The bra was crazy though. It was a it was a like a 36G. Which
someone
was
threw
insane.
A bra at Blink 182 as well, and like for all of their like titties, sex, so yeah, like for that, for all of that, they seem pretty not into.
They're in their 50s.
I know. Yeah. No, they're all like married, and like one of them has a new baby on the way, and all that stuff. But it was just very funny to like see them kind of be like, "Can someone come pick this up?" Like. They're like, my wife is here.
Yeah. The final kind of point on this is that I also can't help but think, just sort of like anecdotally from what I've seen, the people that I know that have spent the most money on seeing these shows or, like buying new outfits for things, is that I think it's also people have disposable income because we don't have kids yet. Like there's a lot of people like normally and other, like even 20 years ago, people our age would have like two kids by now. That would be the expectation. Most of us would, but instead people have disposable income to fly to Paris to go see Taylor Swift or to fly to Sweden for, you know, the first Renaissance show. So that also seems to be like an interesting element of it is like you said, like expanding on what Elise said is it's not like, oh, let's, women have so much spending power. Let's influence which toilet paper they buy for their whole families. It's like, no, you need to influence them to buy things that they are spending insane amounts of money on just for them.
Yeah. And, you know, again, not having kids, we're not buying houses. So.
Girl, yeah, true. No. What do I do with this paycheck? I'm going to fly to some random city and see Taylor Swift.
And also like experience culture too. Mm-hmm. It always goes back to experience versus things.
And I've also seen a lot of talk about how like, you know, this is very much like, obviously the pandemic is, people are getting sick. There's a bit of a wave now, but we haven't had a summer that felt safe to be around large groups of people for a very long time. So it's this real kind of like release of creativity, of girliness. Like we've also experienced, you know, Roe versus Wade being overturned, which I feel like all of these things together, I think have contributed to this thing we've talked about a lot on the podcast with like, whatever the opposite of a pick me is, like it's cool to be a girl's girl again. It's they're just Ken, you know.
Well,
they're just
the ultimate
Ken.
The ultimate diss of all time is the fact that Ethan Slater, who I do disavow now, I know that I initially was very excited. I didn't know about his personal life, but either way, Ethan Slater's wife, who he was married to before getting with Ariana Grande, called her not a girl's girl, which Ariana Grande is not a girl's girl, and I was like. To be called not a girl's girl in 2023 is really the worst thing. You know, Ari heard that.
That is the slight of the moment. Finally, we'll do a very quick minute. Okay, because I want to make sure we get to this. This week, Tori Lanez was sentenced to 10 years in prison for shooting.
Tori Lanez.
Oh, Lanez. I've never heard of that.
Lanez. That's beautiful, though.
Tori's Dominican. Who did
free to keep this, Becca. You guys, because I never watch TV. I just read the news. I guess this isn't even news. This is pop culture.
This is how unimportant he is, though.
Good. Okay, so this week, Tori Lanez... He was sentenced to 10 years in prison for shooting Megan Thee Stallion last December. One kind of gripe I have is that every headline about this says sentenced to 10 years in prison for shooting Megan Thee Stallion in the foot, as if the foot part is supposed to make it like less serious. Like, no, he just shot the woman. He was found guilty of all three charges. And he's been an asshole about this. He claimed in a statement at a sentencing that Megan is, quote, still someone I care deeply for to this day. Mm. Megan wrote a statement that somebody else delivered. She's like, I can't be in a room with him. Which is fair. She said, quote, for once, the defendant must be forced to face the full consequences of his heinous actions and face justice. She said, I've been tormented and terrorized. She reiterated that he had paid bloggers to disseminate false information. He treated my trauma like a joke when I could have been dead. He blamed the system. He blamed the press. And as of late, he's using his childhood trauma to justify his actions. And finally, surely but surely, I'm healing, she said, but I'll never be the same. His crime warrants the full weight of the law. So I think this sort of sentence is, I think the highest was like 22 years, honestly. But the way like LA has some, you know, criminal justice reforms that really just encourage kind of like the median. But yeah, he should definitely be spending a long time in prison for shooting somebody.
Yeah, there's been a lot of discourse on Black Twitter. You know, some not girls, to quote Lily Slater, have been saying like, wow, 10 years is really long. Like, she didn't even die, blah, blah, blah. But it's just Jesus, like, I'm sorry, it's so fucking crazy. Like,
yeah, that's nuts.
That's so nuts. Yeah, but it's also like, the biggest thing about this case is that they had this incident. She wasn't going to say anything about it. He started lying about it to her, discrediting her. He never took responsibility for his actions. He could have had a plea deal. He refused to take it. He thought that he could, you know, that, I mean, unfortunately, you know, society doesn't believe Black women. So he thought he could get away with it. And he didn't. So yeah, he's going to be at least in jail. They're saying at least 8 to 8.5 years, you know, the sentence he's going to serve. So,
right. Yeah. And that's the other thing, like, about the crime in general is, like, it's very lucky that he just shot her in the foot, because my understanding from reading about it is that he was just wildly shooting a gun in her general direction. So, like, we're really fucking lucky that he didn't seriously or fatally injure her in a worse way. And that
he's lucky that I don't think he got charged with attempted murder, and he's lucky about that.
Yeah. And that's like I mean, it's unbelievable how reckless it is to just start firing a gun randomly in someone's direction. So, you know, part of me that tries not to be carceral is in one place, but at the same time, a 10-year sentence doesn't seem that crazy to me when he's someone who, you know, has gotten in trouble, I think, for gun-related charges before. I'm not 100%.
He's not even a citizen. So, you know what I mean?
And he was literally
randomly, from Canada.
Yeah. First of all, he's Canadian. So jail for that. So,
yeah.
Jail for that. Jail.
Right to jail.
and then, but also, like, he literally was randomly and wildly firing a gun at his, like, former romantic partner. That's very, very, very fucked up. And that is something that is indicative of a lot deeper and more fucked up problems. Again, when you think about, like, what domestic violence, like, means and can lead to, the fact that we literally are dealing with someone who will take out a gun and just randomly start firing it at his ex, that is actually someone who should go to jail
and double down and not show remorse at first and
try to smear her in the press, say all this stuff again to bring up Drake. Where's fucking Drake? Because he he said in that song he like called her a liar or whatever, and now the guy who he said she was a liar about is out here saying like, I'm remorseful, I'm sorry for what I did. So it's like, are we going to get an apology from some of these men?
Drake. Much like a double DGG bra, you should be lifting women up.
Yeah. Exactly, Drake. Maybe that's what the bra thrower meant. Maybe it was a statement about his lack of support.
Absolutely. That is our show for today. We will be back Monday, some of us, until the end of democracy. I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales Pico, and Rebecca Sousmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sousmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow @Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com. Betches.